rather than calling it interdisciplinary, because people from outside academia, I've had somebody come up to me in Aberdeen and complain, you know, why is it called the Interdisciplinary Institute? You know, that means nothing to people outside universities. And one way I've thought of, as well as calling it challenge-led research, is to talk about holistic research, you know, so that we're looking at the whole problem and we're trying to look at it in all the different possible ways that we can to come to a new way of understanding and solutions.
When Disciplines Meet is a series of podcasts from the Scottish Graduate School of Social Science, the UK's largest doctoral training partnership for social scientists. With these podcasts, we aim to discuss the aims, nature, and practical experiences of interdisciplinary approaches to research. This episode is on the topic of do we need disciplines? My name's Laura Young, and I'm an interdisciplinary researcher and host of this podcast series. On this episode, I'm joined by three guests: Dr. Lisa Bradley from the University of Glasgow, Professor John Holmwood from the University of Nottingham, and Dr. Rachel Shanks from the University of Aberdeen. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Hi.
Thank you. Now, I think we should open with hopefully an easy question, or maybe not. Which discipline are you from? Lisa, maybe you want to kick us off.
Well, I wonder if you do want me to kick off. That's not an easy question for me, Laura. I've had a range of disciplines that I've situated myself in relation to, from physics and philosophy through to urban studies, criminology, and the list keeps growing. Rather than taking you through my whole history, I'll maybe let John and Rachel give their maybe more contained answer to that question.
Well, my answer is very simple: sociology. And I was also one of the first people to be doing an undergraduate degree in sociology in Britain after the departments were set up in the late 1960s. So the people teaching me weren't typically sociologists. Mm-hmm. So I was a sociologist by undergraduate training, by postgraduate training, and by all other connections. So I'm like a stick of rock with sociology all the way through.
Oh, well, I've switched tracks. So my first two degrees were in law, and I was a law lecturer for a few years. And then through a myriad of different jobs, I then ended up doing a PhD in education. So I'm now in education, but it's possibly not a discipline. But yeah, so if I was to answer, I'd say law and education.
And Lisa, you work as part of an interdisciplinary research group, centre. Could you tell us a bit more just about that?
Sure, yeah. So I'm based in the School of Education, actually, at the University of Glasgow. But I spend most of my time in the Advanced Research Centre, which is an interdisciplinary environment. It's a big building on part of the new expanded Western campus in the University of Glasgow, still very much centre of the West End. And that building co-locates researchers from across the entirety of academic disciplines and everything in between. So everything from people who are working in areas of technology touching life to sustainability, computing scientists, historians, designers and artists join us from Glasgow School of Art as well in different ways in the building. So it really is across the full spectrum of disciplinary possibilities with a vision and a mission to actually work in those spaces in between. So in a way, we've got the ingredients, and now it's a case of how do we support that to see what happens.
Mm. And I think it is a real melting pot of all of that coming together. But the thread that is going to go throughout all of these podcasts from SGSSS is disciplines and interdisciplinarity. And I just wonder, do we have a shared understanding of what interdisciplinarity means? Do we have a definition, or do people have a consensus on what that actually means?
Well, I think interdisciplinarity has become the term that people use, but it's an umbrella term. So it means lots of different things, being multidisciplinary, pluridisciplinary, or disciplines brushing each other gently. So I don't think it has an agreed meaning. I think it just means that there's more than one discipline involved. And maybe that's good that it's not too tight a definition. I think the difficulty is when, for me, I think anyway, is when people get too worked up about what exactly it means or doesn't mean. I think it's just an umbrella term that explains that it's not just a single discipline.
Yeah, I'm slightly more sceptical. So I would say there are probably two kinds of interdisciplinarity. One, which is really interesting and which I would call as politically determined, that's, for example, when you had something based within social movements, for example, like feminism, gender studies, you could say that that was interdisciplinary. It had an impact upon disciplines, but partly its vision of itself was transforming things socially as well as having a criticism of problematic disciplinary foundations. And to some extent, that kind of tension between what let's call it politically driven activities and or strong politically driven activities and disciplines, that I think is still an issue. But then I see another kind of interdisciplinarity which derives from the pressure towards applied social studies. That derives from government fundings. And there used to be a way that was described as something called mode two knowledge to differentiate it from mode one knowledge. Mode two knowledge applied, conducted together with users and so on. And I would say there's a clear distinct, I mean, both forms that I've described are political in the sense one derives from the politics of government funding, the other derives from a politics of social engagement. And they sit together a little uneasily. They're not the same. So you've got, I think, a tension with what you might call conventional self-understanding of disciplines as mode one knowledge. And of course, one is better than two. And then also then the concern about the politicization of social science, which you may take as I regard it as positive. But then the other is what I might call then the instrumentalization of social science, which is also driven by interdisciplinarity. So it's very difficult to separate out those different elements. Mm.
And, you know, you, Lisa, have this centre. How easy do you find it to describe to people what an interdisciplinary research group is all about?
Sure. Well, first of all, I would say it's not my centre, but I am an important part of the ARC and the interdisciplinary lead there, and it's very much a collaborative effort across academics and professional services colleagues as well. And I think that collaborative nature of it means that it really is not taken forward by one individual, but a collective of us, including all of the researchers in the building as well. We also have a group we call the Architects, which are researchers and professional services colleagues who are open to thinking about how do you take that over. So collectivity, if you like, collaboration sits across it all. But when we think about that in practice, I agree it's something that is really hard to define. What exactly interdisciplinarity or all of the other terms we could use to describe that, what it actually is as a thing. I've often found Moti Nassani's analogy of the fruit bowl quite useful. I don't know whether people are familiar with that, whether your listeners are familiar with that. But he describes a way of thinking about it that is, I think, Rachel, you talked about brushing up against one another. I think it kind of gets us towards that. So we can think of the traditional, if you like, the mode one configuration of a university as being like different fruits on a table. You've got your bananas, your apples, your oranges, maybe you've got some limes in there. And they're sharing that space, but there's clear areas between them. You kind of move along the spectrum a little bit and suddenly you've got the fruit in a fruit bowl. They still retain their own individual discrete shapes, but all of a sudden the kind of the proximity of the apples and the bananas are ripening the fruits a little bit more. There's contact there and it's changing the nature of the individual fruits. That we might describe as a kind of multidisciplinary space. Beyond that, you can then think about a fruit salad where you've got the fruits in the fruit bowl. You've got some serving spoons, and again, you can distinguish the apple from the banana, from the blueberry, from the strawberry, but it is possible to pick up your fork and take a scoop of that, and all of a sudden you're tasting the blueberry with the apple and something new has been made that might map onto, Nisani would argue, that kind of cross-disciplinary space where you have more than just single disciplines talking to one another, but actually there's a cross-fertilisation that's happening there. Beyond that, then we can actually get even more involved and decide that we're going to put all of those fruits in a blender and make a smoothie. Yeah. And there's no going back. And that's really when we're starting to move into that properly interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary space where the individual identities of the fruits, sort of the disciplines, has transformed so much that we can no longer call them what they were. And for me, that spectrum doesn't give us an easy answer to that kind of question. But what it does suggest is that it's not a fixed destination, but something which exists along a spectrum, and it can be interdisciplinary light or it can be completely unrecognisable and start to create something new as a result.
Yeah, so I was just going to mention that, so at the University of Aberdeen, we have an interdisciplinary institute as well. And so it's been organised around not exactly challenges, but close to that. So obviously with SGSSS has the challenge-led pathways now. And so at Aberdeen, we've, you know, five challenge areas, and I'm director for social inclusion and cultural diversity. And I can see, you know, the arguments, you know, sometimes have with colleagues from various disciplines and institutions about maybe they want to keep, you know, within their own discipline. But I think a useful way of thinking that it's maybe not just the government-led politics with a small p research, it can also be, if you like, politics with a big P in terms of challenge-led research, is that actually it can be about the very big challenges that are facing us in terms of climate change. Mm-hmm. And actually we do need disciplines to work together. And so I started to think maybe rather than calling it interdisciplinary, because people up from outside academia, I've had somebody come up to me in Aberdeen and complain, you know, why is it called the Interdisciplinary Institute? You know, that means nothing to people outside universities. And one way I've thought of, as well as calling it challenge-led research, is to talk about holistic research, you know, so that we're looking at the whole problem and we're trying to look at it in all the different possible ways that we can to come to a new way of understanding and solutions, which can cover both, you know, like maybe what the government is wanting, but also actually what society, you know, what should be happening for society.
Yeah, again, I've got to be the sceptical one here. I think the problem with challenge-led research is who's determining the challenge. So if one said from a disciplinary basis, the idea of what is challenging comes out of the discipline itself and how it understands problems, how it researches them, and then how it configures those problems. So I think what we're describing loses that sense of autonomy within the disciplines, or at least problem solving associated with intellectual problems associated with disciplines. So one of the things I used to say to colleagues in challenge-based research is that can you find a university that doesn't do challenge-based, you know, doesn't confront the big challenges, doesn't have five major themes, and can you find one that has a theme that isn't in all the other universities. So we often promote interdisciplinarity as a basis of innovation. And what you have is a framing of interdisciplinarity within something which is actually quite conformist across institutions. And then if I were to ask another question, one of the things that happens is a lot of funding is devoted to these challenges. So what is the basis of the evaluation of the success of those challenges? And what you will notice is the evaluation will be self-referential. That is, there won't be an independent basis of doing that. It will be in terms of the same kinds of sort of metrics. So the REF with the impact agenda kind of reinforces the idea of the same challenges that are outside. So I think we're at risk of having a system of investment in social science, conception of social science, management of social science, which is highly conformist in character and which involves pointing the finger at people like me and saying, well, you're somebody who is defending orthodox. I said, well, actually, what I'm doing is trying to show the orthodoxy of the new position rather than saying I'm sort of committed to old style disciplines.
Well, I probably thought the same as you that, because I thought I look at what Glasgow is doing and Edinburgh. And I think I thought, oh, it will all be doing very similar things. So I was actually surprised recently. I just looked this summer. And actually, I think the institutions are playing to their strengths. So they are different in terms of the areas that they're concentrating on for focusing for interdisciplinary work. But I think with all universities, they're not going to prevent people from doing other interdisciplinary work outside the themes that they have set. And I think I'm probably closer to you than you realise. I'm further from Lisa in terms of what do we think of disciplines, because I feel that my grounding in law has totally shaped all the different jobs I've done and how I look at education. So I feel that we have to start in a discipline. We have to have that disciplinary foundation to then be able to take on extra things and maybe add, because we've got that previous disciplinary knowledge. My concern would be that if people are doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that at the beginning and they have no firm foundation to work from.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting, I think, thing for me to think with, actually. My undergraduate degree was in philosophy, and I can see an argument now where I'm still a philosopher. I'm doing research about research. I'm making knowledge about how we make knowledge. That's been the mainstay of philosophy in terms of reality and knowledge politics for the longest time. I didn't do much of that direct thinking towards the academy when I was doing my undergraduate degree. And very much the philosophy that I was studying was a kind of British kind of empirical tradition philosophy, or analytic tradition. But it nonetheless gave me a foundation to think with and to think against. And so actually my undergraduate dissertation, if we go way back, was called One Hand Claps to the Sound of a New Logic. And it was thinking about formal logic as this way of being able to look at anything in the world and trying to kind of map out a certain range of relations that were either true or false. And there's no space within formal logic for contradiction. And I was really interested in that as to what about contradiction? How might that be the spark for something new? How might those differences and paradoxes that we encounter in the world, might those be at the root of consciousness or reality? So it was big questions that I was grappling with. And yet formal logic was just unquestioned and sits across so many of our disciplines as well, of ideas of rationality, linearity. There's just so much of that infused in how we think about the world. So my question was, okay, so how might we shift those foundations to think differently? And at that time, there was a philosopher called Graham Priest, who I've lost track of. I don't know where he is in the world, if he's still in the world, but he came up with this idea of paraconsistent logic, which was a logic that allowed us the space to hold contradiction and paradox. And I loved that. But then I left philosophy behind for a really, really long time. And it wasn't actually until I got back into my PhD that I realised there was a whole range of philosophy that I hadn't even come across. Continental philosophy, science and technology studies, feminist philosophy, queer philosophy. And it just hadn't been part of my undergraduate degree, but certainly those are the type of thinkers who kind of are companions for my work now. So people like Donna Haraway, Karen Barad, who are kind of sitting at those edges. So I really do take your point, Rachel. And maybe coming back to your first question, I can see a world where I sit here and I say, I'm a philosopher.
And I think there's already, we've used so many different pieces of terminology here, and actually often, I don't know how you feel, but as an academic, sometimes I try and not use jargon, but actually this podcast is exactly where we want to use it, because this is what we are discussing. But Lisa, one phrase or word or hyphenated word that you often use for yourself is anti-disciplinary. I guess we've not actually said that out loud, this word. Maybe you've discussed it, but why do you use that when describing the work that you do?
So, yeah, I have used anti-disciplinary in various ways to describe my work. And I think it comes from thinking, again, not of kind of disciplinarity, interdisciplinarity or anti-disciplinarity as a thing, but as a practice. So quite often my work involves looking at the ways that we do make knowledge, recognising that the traditional model of a university is historically to separate knowledge into disciplines and to allow for that really deep, rigorous work that kind of builds method, builds theory and then builds answers that can become impactful in the world. Of course, we've moved into this kind of more challenge-led period of time and that is starting to shift. But I agree with John, it's shifted in a very orthodox way. It's using those original imaginations of what a university is to then think about what interdisciplinarity can be. And I think that's dangerous because I think then any possibilities that thinking across disciplines might give us for imagining beyond our current horizons are always tamed, they're always kind of pulled back to, but how does this fit within a university? How does this fit within our current knowledge politics? So I think of anti-disciplinarity as not so much of a thing, but as a practice, as a way of thinking beyond the orthodoxy. So it's something that I do rather than it's something that I am. And there's so many other words that I could describe that as thinking beyond kind of our current horizons, thinking against orthodoxies, thinking with orthodoxies. So, yeah, I think hopefully that answers your question.
I think we're in a dangerous space of getting involved in a full-on academic argument.
Sure, yeah. Debate.
Because my sort of background in sociology was through the idea of contradiction as well. So I'm sort of very sympathetic to what you said, except I then thought, oh, wait, when you cited Peirce's arguments. Because I think the point about a contradiction is that it, is, in a sense, identifies a problem and a problem to be solved. And the solution of the problem requires the reconstruction of the categories within which the problem emerges. So I don't think of as a contradiction as a stable element, and that what we have to do is, in a sense, accept contradictions, that what we need to do is solve contradictions, and what they represent is at some point the limit of our current thinking within a discipline or even within an interdiscipline. Because if you say, well, the interdiscipline can tolerate contradictions, I'd say, well, what it's tolerating is unsolved problems and it shouldn't really tolerate them. So then I was interested as well in, you know, some of your sources, because I share them, sort of Donna Haraway, feminist critiques of science and so on. And part of what I think in that is, well, I wish a world in which sociology is reconstructed as a consequence of that intervention, rather than what we say was, let's create a separate new discipline or a separate new way of orienting ourselves away from the discipline, because that allows the discipline to get away with its orthodoxy, and it allows a new area to not, in a sense, deliver properly upon the challenge. So that's why I think it's important to keep the discipline and the interdisciplinary challenges together. Now, I'm going to do a segue to say I was actually in at the start of the formation of the doctoral programs, because I was on the ESRC research methods committee and so on. And I was one of those who was, you know, critical of them. I was involved in the evaluation of the setting up of the Scottish Graduate School as well. And I think the Scottish Graduate School has been one of the most successful ones. But if you look at the development of the other doctoral programs, they are de-disciplining themselves. And in a paradoxical way, because the doctoral programs were intended in their first initiation to reinforce doctoral training and research methods training across the board, they've become silos in themselves, so that in a sense they're defined by the challenges. And then the students who are doing PhDs are not funded through the doctoral programs, but are funded separately, are in a sense outside that. And the doctoral programs, not necessarily the Scottish one, have de-disciplined themselves, and there is no longer the rigorous training of disciplinary social science, which is what the ESRC started out and began with. And so I suspect something interesting is going on in the politics of funding and social policy or government public policy towards the social sciences under a unified UKRI, which is in a sense squeezing out some of what was what is necessary and distinctive about the social sciences. And I put very specifically the social sciences, because I think there's a tendency to prefer the behavioural sciences within that kind of modelling. You know, that is economics, psychology, and so on. So what we're witnessing is a squeezing out of sociology, politics, and so on, and anthropologies to some degree, as distinctive disciplines, whilst the behavioural science disciplines retain their identity, psychology and economics. They become the least interdisciplinary of all disciplines. And the social disciplines that I've mentioned become more dissipated. And so I think there is a possible crisis of knowledge production, that the excitement of any individual student beginning a PhD and beginning in an interdisciplinary project is not necessarily aware of what the you know, the changing nature of the context and how that might deliver things in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned earlier, John, about the instrumentalization of knowledge, and I wonder if that's something to kind of come back to here, because of course we see that in the social sciences, we see that in ways where our traditional disciplines and those interdisciplinary scholarships or research projects now are having to show what they're for, how they relate to impact. There has to be that kind of direct line from the work to the outside world. And of course, we're seeing that in arts funding as well. Yeah. That idea of arts for art's sake is something that in Scotland, anyway, we've really tried to hold on to. And then, of course, with shifts to the institutional landscape of kind of Creative Scotland coming into being, that itself has enacted this categorisation of the various art forms. And this is a tangent, but we also see within that landscape different forms of practice being assessed by non-practice specialists, yeah, as well, very much with a kind of link to other policy agendas. But how will this help health? How will this help education? How will this transform social security? And I think it's that slippery slope, isn't it? It's first they come for the arts and then the social sciences. And So I don't, I think perhaps that's underpinning some of what you're moving towards absolutely. As well, John. And I think very rarely, and I don't know if this is within that shift or whether this is just the nature of doing a PhD, but there's, in my experience, not a lot of attention paid to that question of research about research or situating those practices of knowledge making within the academy, which of course itself is a particular construct, a particular machine. So for a student or for a researcher to become aware of the kind of the politics of all of that is some of it you pick up, but a lot of it you're learning throughout your career as well. And that kind of brings me back. And I don't know if we're far apart in this or not, but that idea of instrumentalization and that point we're making about contradiction as well, is I totally agree that that is one way that you can handle contradiction, but there is these other ways of relating to contradiction and paradox. And my, I guess, curiosity isn't about ever having only one way to relate to a thing or how we might solve it, but actually pluralizing the ways in which we might relate to phenomena in the world. So with contradiction, what does it mean to kind of feel ourselves into that space? What methods might we use to resist some of that kind of recategorization, which maybe sits easier in some disciplines rather than others? And what becomes possible as a result of doing that? And I don't have an answer to that, but what I'm really curious about is the range of possibilities of how we can relate. And that for me is a way to kind of resist a lot of that instrumentalization of knowledge, where quite often we sit in this very particular linear temporality and trajectory from research that we do to impact, or even just how we orient ourselves towards time in the world, which doesn't necessarily create the space for those kind of loopings and questions and dead ends and what else might come of that.
And I would just think that that led me to think about the contradiction in a way of government policy towards research. So we, on the one hand, we have this push for challenge-led funding. And then on the other hand, we have the research excellence framework, which wants us to publish in our particular disciplines, you know. So we have that difficulty of, you know, maybe we can see that our area of research lends itself to working with multiple disciplines. But then we have to also be aware that when we're writing up the research, we want to find journals that are in our discipline so that they're in our unit of assessment, and very much adhering to that discipline so that it will be ranked highly if the output is being assessed. You know, so there's also that tension within the disciplines.
I think the one of the difficult, of course, the REF and main panel C, which is where, you know, our listeners are also going to be oriented to it. So don't just say it ourselves, but half of the units of assessment are interdisciplinary units. So you have interdisciplines along with disciplines. So maybe we should talk about these new disciplines, say management studies is an interdiscipline rather than a discipline. And its status as an interdiscipline is not quite the same as saying that it's interdisciplinary. So there's that aspect, and that quite a lot of interdisciplines have their origins within applied studies. And I think one of the issues of origins is kind of interesting, because I can think of my origins as a sociologist, and, you know, others, you've said, you know, a philosopher and law, but it's a bit like doing a survey on class. All of us can tell a story about the class we were, but class used to be a narrative about the future, not a narrative about our personal histories, but a narrative about how social structures were reproduced, transformed, and so on. So I think we need to think, so that's why we need to think of what is happening to knowledge, and how is knowledge being reproduced, and what is the impact of the challenges. I think it is difficult to talk about, you know, well, sociology is clearly a discipline. I think economics is clearly a discipline and psychology is. If sociology is a discipline, it's a pretty undisciplined discipline. But nonetheless, it's probably is a discipline. But the new ref arrangements are going to be kind of interesting. Might actually think of some of these issues from the point of view of, you know, new members of the profession coming in, you know, graduates from the graduate school, as it were. And that is, you each item for the ref can now be submitted to multiple U of A's. So we're no longer thinking of, well, what U of A does this go in, but what several U of A's might it go in? So I could imagine, for example, an economics paper could go into an economics U of A and in a management studies paper. A sociology paper could go in to a sociology U of A or a social policy or education, and so on. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to have is a situation where somebody's work is going to be seen as being potentially across U of A's, and that will be a new kind of understanding of how interdisciplinarity functions. And it will be something that students coming through will have to think of. I always used to say to graduate students, well, the great thing about interdisciplinarity and thinking of your subject as in interdisciplinary terms, so you're a sociologist and you're working on health, that's two places you can get a job. You can get a job in sociology or in health studies. If you're a sociologist and working on issues of crime, that's two places you can get a job. So think of your topic as providing you with access to a field, but also think of your discipline of giving you as an access to a field. And that's why I think, despite the emphasis on interdisciplinarity, it is necessary for, you know, people who are teaching and educating within graduate schools to also keep their eye on the discipline that students might be associated with, to think of, are they, in a sense, meeting the requirements of that discipline as a future area of employment, not only as a future place to submit their work in a future ref, although the thought that, and since I mentioned the future, the thought that the ref might just go on and on is terrible.
It points to, I think, a really, that point you were making around the fact that we can tell these stories, but of course the stories change the minute we tell them, because we are living into the future. Yeah. I think one of the things that I've been doing a lot in my work in the ARC and research that goes along with that is thinking towards the idea of the university of the future. So as academics, how do we kind of move towards the future with intent? Mm-hmm. But as an institution, structurally, how do we move towards that? And I think your point, Rachel, of that kind of contradiction between UKRI challenge-based agendas and REF is a really interesting one, because academics feel it. We know that this is a tension that's not just in black and white on paper, but it really shapes how we go through our everyday work and our everyday practice. And I think we see a lot of that then kind of play out in the kind of the narratives that academics tell themselves around workload, being struggling to find funding, a lot of those kind of internalised problems, if you like, that's quite easy to think of as we're at fault here, without necessarily also seeing structurally how is the institution enabling this, or how is it acting as a barrier. So if we do move towards the new ref where papers can be submitted to multiple units of assessment, but where REF is organised at a college and a school level in my university, mm-hmm. how do we have that more kind of zoomed out view? What structures do we need in place for that? But beyond REF, for me, a lot of the time, if I'm thinking about the university of the future, it's about what new structures and systems and policies and ways of relating to one another do we need to build in order to ensure that we maintain that disciplinary depth that has allowed so much knowledge to become impactful in the world, but also then actually provide those spaces for researchers who maybe are more of a sinking in the gaps in between type sensibility to thrive in those spaces without feeling that they either just need to pick one area or another. So part of it is, how do you incentivize that? Or at very least, how do you not pose that barrier there, which then leads to academics, I think, having quite a hard time, relatively speaking, because actually we're all a very privileged bunch, aren't we? We have a, for the most part, a very lovely absolutely. Job. Yeah.
And Rachel, how much of this comes down to that individual personality of a researcher, actually people who, you know, very much did their undergraduate in one thing and think, this is it, I'm just going to stick with this because this is what I like, versus maybe someone who's got a personality for something different? Does that play into it at all, or is it a lot of the culture and the institutional shape?
I was thinking about that because obviously I knew we were doing the podcast today, and I think yesterday I was wondering, is it to do with the type of curiosity that you have? So that it might be that all your curiosity can be contained within your discipline, you know, because there's more to find out, you know, there's more to research. But it might be that sometimes you realise, actually, I need to go outside my discipline to find out more about this topic. And so it is about the individual, but it's also about what the topic they're researching, you know. So something I'm researching now has brought together six different disciplines, just because they all are relevant, you know, to researching that issue. So I do think it depends, you know, partly on the researcher and what their how their interests are, and also about what they're, you know, that the topic, what they're researching.
I mean, it is a really fascinating question. Mm. So has it brought together six different disciplines or six different people?
Similar people.
Or people who are...
Sensibility, yeah.
You know, who are... have similar attitudes to the problem to work on.
Yeah. So, I thought I might get through the podcast without mentioning school uniform, but obviously
not.
Oh,
no, I've been teeing it up all the whole way. We would love to hear about the school uniforms.
So, yeah, so the grant application that we're still waiting the final outcome on brings together, you know, myself in education, a colleague at City University in social policy, colleagues at City University in London in economics, in law, in computing, and then colleagues in textiles at the University of Leeds. Mm-hmm. So it really is interdisciplinary in terms of looking at the quality of school uniforms. So that's where the textile research comes in, trying to capture the data across multiple websites and information sets, brings in the computing colleagues, and then looking at the legal regulation in terms of the monopolies that you could suggest that some school uniform suppliers have, and then the economic model, you know, that whether that is fit for purpose in the school uniform market. And then obviously the social policy and education side of it is to do with, and this is all to do with branded school uniforms. So it's to see, you know, what actually is a branded school uniform? What's the difference between having a logo with the name of your school on it to having the same colour jumper without the logo on it? And, you know, that's what we're hoping to research. But it's that thing of where it's been about adding disciplines to be able to research the whole issue from all the different angles and sides. So that's... are they all different disciplines enough? Are they separate enough for you?
But I think it's interesting, you know, but it is, in a sense, it's people converging on the problem. So it's I think it is person specific, and I think it's important to keep that aspect of it as well. Because, I mean, in a sense, you know, to encourage graduates who are prospective, you know, future researchers and academics to recognise that it's about social relationships and personal relationships as well as academic relations. So it's not a lot of point in a sense of looking for an economist to work with, but in a sense, in the course of your engagement with people, you know, getting to know people
in other disciplines
to work out areas in which you
overlap. So this all came from the colleague at City University, Matt Barnes, being disgusted at the cost of his daughter's skirt and looking, well, who researches school uniform? And came across me, emailed me and said, oh, can we meet? You know, so we met online, we've met in person, you know, and so it's a... But it was just that horror that he discovered that the same school skirt without the logo was 3 times cheaper by the same company making the same, well, supplying the same skirt.
So it
is that, you know, personal connection, personal interest, and then finding colleagues who wanted, you know, who also were interested in looking at that issue.
And I think something that bringing different people, personalities, perspectives and disciplines together does is it maybe unearths more of these social challenges and the issues there than just maybe looking at it from one individual perspective. And I'm glad you brought it up, because sometimes it's good to actually speak about a really specific example. And I've been thrown back to when you were at school debating club and should we wear school uniform was always a topic that came up. And so I'm sure there's some children at school that will love to look at your research to arm themselves for their debate. And I feel we've had such a rich discussion. And actually, I think part of what this podcast is hoping to do is provide that food for thought for all academics, but especially people who are in the graduate school, to be thinking about the terms that we use every day. What do they mean? Whether it's about describing yourself as a researcher, the work that you're doing, or thinking about future, you know, opportunities. And I think this has been such a rich discussion. But I would like to round up by asking you all the question that we're asking at the end of everyone, which is, do you think we need disciplines?
So I think you'll know my answer is yes, because I think you need that foundation. And I also just wanted to say, for people who aren't doing interdisciplinary research who are listening, don't worry about that. You know, I feel we have to say it's not that you have to do it, but just that we should make it as easy as possible if it makes sense for you. So, yes, I definitely think we need disciplines.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think you're absolutely right that somebody has to be excited by the research they're doing. They have to have a problem that is meaningful to them and one that they feel that other people would be interested in an answer being provided. Those other people can be fellow academics or, you know, people, you know, people out in the world, as it were. But I don't like to put it this way, but I think of disciplines as the manure in which the research can grow. Mm. So you have to keep the ground well composted and
that's great.
Well supplied.
I like that.
With nutrients, because there is a risk that you can sort of, you know, the ground can be overused in a sense, and you're not paying attention to what you need to put back in.
Yep, I totally agree. I think we absolutely do need disciplines. We need to understand what disciplinary knowledge has allowed us to do as humankind, the kind of the changes it's allowed us to make in the world. That if you are of a sensibility where you're moving between, you're looking in the cracks in between, you're not necessarily actually able to do that really deep, rigorous thinking that actually allows us to create something very, very specific. So I think it's the way our universities have been organised and the way our universities will continue to be organised. But more than that, we need them for the types of knowledge that they afford. For me, the question always comes back to, how do you have the and? How do you also then open spaces for knowledge making that isn't disciplinary in nature? And this, for me, ranges across all of our practices as academics, whether it's how we publish, whether it's how we write in our papers to a specific audience, whether it's how we approach grant funding, we select our PhD students that we want to work with, how we need to write ourselves into a promotion narrative. That disciplinary thinking has such a hold over how we orient ourselves towards knowledge making within the academy. Mm-hmm. So it's the question for me is, how do you also prize open potential for interdisciplinary sensibilities within that, to not colour in with the lines, but to kind of think outside the box, to use another cliche, but that for me is something that is necessary, but it's difficult to do within the academy. So for me, it's not getting rid of disciplines, but how do we create the space for that? In the ARC, the Advanced Research Centre, we took a look at how much of the kind of the knowledge output of the university that the ARC accounts for. And it's 10%. By far, this is a kind of, it's a marginal space within the university. It's for all researchers in the University of Glasgow who want to think in that way, but certainly it is not something that actually will replace the schools or the colleges or the university or the centre. But in creating that marginal space, that space of possibility for those who either think differently in those ways, it hopefully catalyses some of what I'm talking about. And I think points us towards maybe some of those other structures that we might need to think beyond as well. So to come back to the fruit analogy that I spoke about, it's the focus is on the fruit, the kind of the fruit either being on a table or in a bowl or diced up or in a smoothie. But we also need to think about the tools and the apparatus that actually allow the fruit to persist in that state. So the table is one, and our universities are more established as tables than bowls. You move into that kind of space where they're in the fruit bowl together, and all of a sudden you need a bowl to contain them and bring together. So in a university, what are our structures? What are our policies? What are our ways of thinking and working together that might enable that? If you move into the kind of the fruit salad, all of a sudden you need a knife and you need a fork or you need a spoon, and actually you maybe need other bowls as well. So the structural conditions change. And of course, when you're at the smoothie, you all of a sudden need a blender and a glass and a straw. So for me, it's about that interdisciplinary sensibility, always with a question of structurally as well, what needs to shift to create that permissive environment for thinking in that way.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of university managers with knives and blenders is—I feel quite worried.
Not a benign process.
I meant to mention this earlier, but it was a very early ESRC meeting about the impact agenda, and they brought together a lot of people involved in different charities, NGOs, and so on, and they were asking them about what research had impact. And so the whole group of them were there, and you know, I was there but part of this discussion, and they asked these people in, you know, disability NGOs and very health-related NGOs, and they said, well, what has been impactful from social science research? And they said, oh, well, you know, the sociology of the body. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yeah, well, which particular sociology of the body? You know, they said, well, you know, the sociology of the body. So they said, but yeah, but whose sociology of the body? And they said, well, just actually the field of the sociology of the body. And so actually, I think that's an important thing to think about in terms of disciplines and even interdisciplinarity, that it's a collective thing, and what we've allowed to happen and through the ref and so on is the individuation of it, and that in some sense what is impactful is the academic project itself, the fact that the sociology of the body came into being, not that it was this particular version of it or that particular version of it. That is what excited people. What excited them was not being given answers, in a sense, by the expertise of people in the sociology of the body, but being given new questions for their practice. And I think that's how we should think of research as a process of questioning. And I think that would fit with your idea of interdisciplinarity and so on.
Yeah. Well, what was maybe a simple question of do we need disciplines or what is interdisciplinarity? We've had a wealth of conversation. And so I want to thank you for being on this episode of the podcast, which I know will have been rich smoothies for thought or manure for growth or something to put on like your school uniform. So thank you very much for being on this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
When Disciplines Meet is hosted by me, Laura Young, recorded at the podcast studio Glasgow and edited by the operations team at the Scottish Graduate School of Social Science. The podcast was conceived by SGSSS's Deputy Director for Training, Dr. Katie Keenan, and Associate Director, Dr. Roxanne Connolly. SGSSS is funded by the Economic and Social Research Council and the Scottish Funding Council and our 16 partner universities. To find out more about the Scottish Graduate School of Social Science, you can visit our website at www.sgsss.ac.uk. Thank you so much for listening.